We'll go ahead and start our meeting for October 10th, 6 p.m. And first order of business is a roll call.
Okay, Kit?
Yes.
Malcolm?
Yeah.
Robin's not here. Bill?
Yeah.
I know Mr. Frick's here.
Yeah.
Margaret? She's not here. Oh, she is. Okay, she snuck in. Harold?
Yes.
Gordy?
Here.
Jack?
Yeah.
Grace?
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum. Our next item is the consent calendar. We have, do we have the minutes for
yes, we
June
do.
13th and July 18th?
Yes,
so
we do.
Any corrections, additions,
I
comments?
I heard something that somebody broke into my house and stole my notes.
Oh, my God.
There's no value.
Are you dog eaters?
Sure dog
the dog may have eaten them, yeah.
There was a sentence that ended without a word, and I can't remember. It wasn't on July 13th, though.
And July
13th?
June.
It went so something and
I can't remember that
period.
Far back.
What the heck was that? Fill in whatever works for you.
Approved as amended.
You have the minutes. I'll look at them and show you later.
Was it?
It was the June minute.
Okay. Go ahead and look. We'll go ahead and do the July 18th then. At this point, I'd accept a motion to approve the minutes as has been presented.
So moved.
Okay. Moved by second by Jack. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, let's go to number four then while he's looking at that, and I can give you a report on that at this point. I went to an administrative meeting, I don't remember the date now, but the new commissioner, Don Reedy, had asked a question about where the planning office was in regards to our recommendations from the committee, and there was some discussion, and the process was supposed to be that the board was going to meet with the planning director and go over the recommendations. What wound up happening is the board, after their discussion at the administrative meeting, was directed the planning director to go ahead and start setting up a schedule with the planning commission to move forward with the recommendations. So in talking with Ann just a little while ago, was at least tentatively it's been set for a workshop with the planning commission on their next planning commission meeting?
Actually, I think what David is going to try and do is have a workshop on the 24th of
October.
This month. Mm-hmm.
24th of October. So I guess my thought would be for some of us, if you could be there, and we'll get more information, get an email out. So at least it's beginning. And the workshop primarily is just a discussion between the planning director and the planning commission, but I think it would be worthwhile for some of us to be there, at least I've been on the committee that are task force
to
show support, but if there's some question or clarification that we're at least available to help them with that. So if you put that on your calendar for the 24th, I believe they meet at 6 o'clock at the Ambassador's.
It will not be at Ambassador's.
Oh.
It'll probably be at our planning office.
Okay.
And we'll probably do that at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
How are you going to fit everybody in your planning office?
I don't know how many people are going to come.
Well, they have how many are on the planning commission?
The planning commission, you know, there's a boatload now.
I know, but we've done that before, and we have them all around the big conference table out in where we have our team meeting.
All right, we probably can use this as a default.
Okay.
Okay, so tentatively at the planning office, 24th at 7 o'clock for a workshop.
6 o'clock. 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. Okay.
Excuse me. But I have to firm that up with David, so I'll send an email.
I do know that the new commissioner, Don Reedy, has met with Dave and gone through our recommendations. I'm going to try and have a meeting with Mr. Reedy myself and have a discussion with him. He indicated he'd like to talk to me about it, so I haven't done that part yet. But he's interested. He's up to speed on the recommendations. Commissioner Hare has read the recommendations. I don't believe Castanelli still hadn't read them as of 2 weeks ago. There's hope. So any question on that at this point? Jack?
Jim went to business meeting during the three-minute input session. He called the board's attention, and Commissioner Hare expressed a lot of support and seemed to see the importance in the deer winter ranger's use.
Okay. Do you have any more on that?
I thought it was time that we asked, you know, for all the time that we've all put into this, did it have any significance to the three commissioners that were sitting there, and we hadn't heard anything, and otherwise, if it was, you know, a dead issue, why were we wasting our time? And Commissioner Harris said that they had gone to Dave and asked Dave to pass it along through the planning department so that we could finally get an answer, and they as much as promised, and I just couldn't understand why it took them 2 months after we handed them the document from this group to even get it to this stage that they're meeting for the 24th. You know, I mean, what took them so long?
They're busy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you, it's just booming over there planning every time I'm in there. You know, you can hear the crickets in the back bathroom.
At planning?
Yeah.
I think those are our office.
Yeah, I hear crickets in there. And I'm just kidding. Maybe those weren't crickets. They could have just been, you know, unemployed people crying in the back room.
That's what it is.
Tree frogs.
Tree frogs, that's right.
What it is.
Or red tree wolves, I'm not sure.
Did you find it?
Yeah. Occupied us the whole week. It wasn't a big deal.
Okay. So because it's
nobody else would have seen it.
Okay.
On purpose to trick it through narrow.
So let's go back to number three and take a motion on the minutes for June 13th. I'd accept a motion for approving minutes as presented.
I would make a motion that
we... He moved. You're second.
No, I'm not in second.
You're not.
I propose a second amended.
As amended. Okay. Is there a second to that motion?
How are they amended?
Yeah, they haven't been amended.
Never say.
They were not amended, so how can they be, you know, amended? You have to let me know how to amend them in order to amend them. Otherwise...
Fill in any missing words.
You can add whatever word you want.
I can probably think of a few, yes. But
so I guess the motion could be to accept the minutes as presented with the understanding that there would be a completion of whatever the final sentence was that was not provided.
Well, that's... that.
Do you know what that is?
No, I have no idea what it is. If Malcolm saw something there...
It's okay.
Is it okay?
Nobody's
going to
read it.
Okay. Malcolm says he's okay with it. His motion died for lack of second, so I'll accept another motion.
Grace?
I move.
Thanks.
Grace moved to approve the minutes of June 13th.
Kit? She's second.
Kate seconded.
See how that's done?
I like that. I took a note on how to do that.
Did I say anything
at that meeting? Now we'll move on.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay.
Piece of cake.
This reminds me of watching the chairman at the Land Conservation and Development Commission when they were taking actions yesterday, Thursday. He was asked for a motion, and he'd appoint somebody that ought to set for... move and then appoint somebody for the second. That's how he did it, and that was done.
Well, that's expertise.
Boy, it did. It worked.
Yeah. I know it.
And he did it three times, so finally they caught on. Somebody finally made another motion. Okay, three's done.
I was just going right through the agenda real quick.
You bet. Okay, number. Five is going to be continued. Do we need it to keep continuing this, do you think, or should
No, I think it should be on the next. It'll be okay on the next one.
Next one, okay, November. It'll be November 14th, I believe.
Are we meeting?
Well, that's tentative. We haven't got to that part yet. We're just moving down this. If we have a meeting in November, we'll be.
It would be the 14th, yeah.
The other one, item number six, is being removed permanently. That one will be taken off at this point. I'm not prepared to deal with it.
Oh.
Other than that, yeah. Number seven, subcommittee regarding the OAR 660-006 cubic feet per acre per year requirement. Bob. Park.
Changes in the OARs said that the county has to identify forest land using cubic feet per acre per year from the NRCS soil survey on their website, which does affect Josephine County, because Josephine County used site index as a part of their IRR system.
We have to get rid of every soil in the county?
No, we don't have to. I talked to Keith Kubik, who's the planning director at Douglas County, and he said what they did up there was, instead of redoing everything, what they did is they adopted a conversion table that says site index equals this cubic feet per acre per year to be consistent with the NRCS soil survey, and that's how they dealt with it. One of the
is
things.
Is there a direct mapping, a one-to-one mapping?
Hmm? There's a correlation between site index and cubic feet per acre. There is a conversion factor. To go through and reassign it, it's pretty simple to take the NRCS and put it into our polygon mapping that we already have. So that would be something that it can be done with no real issue or no real problem. What really makes the problem come to fruition is, even though you use the cubic feet per acre per year number from NRCS, that does not definitively say whether it's forest land or not. That's not adopted in any form by the state of Oregon. It's not in the LCDC rules. It's not even in the NRCS. It just says, here's what the cubic feet per acre per soil is, and then it's up to somebody else to figure out where is the dividing line of whether it's forest land or not.
Can we just come up with our own
design? We can. And what I pulled out, and I can email everybody, there's a court case, or the Aluga case, 2009-068, which is James Just versus Linn County, where the issue is talked about in detail. And Luba clearly says that you can have a local determination of where that dividing line is, because it's not been adopted by anybody specifically. And what they have said is, the Oregon Department of Forestry rules say that if you meet 20 cubic feet per acre per year and you harvest it, then you have to replant. Still doesn't say whether it's commercial forest land or not. And that is the definitive issue that it's supposed to talk about, is commercial forest land, not just any old forest land, because when you go to the definitions, they talk about commercial tree species means trees recognized for commercial production under rules adopted by the State Board of Forestry. And that's where you get this cubic feet per acre per year, whether it's Douglas fir or sugar pine, or what they have a number of different tree species that they use. And what they said in this Luba case is, clearly under 20 cubic feet per acre per year can be done for us. That they just didn't see that there was anything that would make it so people would get under 20 cubic feet per acre per year as being commercial forest land. And they went on to say is that there are a number of other factors that you could bring to bear to say whether it's commercial forestry or not. whether it's lot size that you're dealing with, relationship to other parcels in the area, historical use, so you can look at different factors. And when you go into some more details, it says clearly over 80 cubic feet per acre per year is going to be commercial forest land. They just don't have any basis to say that it's not.
Based on the gap between 20 and
80. For historic use. They said where the rub comes is between 40 and 80. Because there is a provision in the exclusive farm zone standards when you're looking at a non-resource dwelling. It says if it has a forest assessment, if it's below 50 cubic feet per acre per year, you can get a non-resource dwelling, an exclusive farm. But if it has a forest assessment and it's over 50 cubic feet per acre per year, you cannot have a non-resource dwelling. So there is a line there that says 50 cubic feet for a dwelling, there's an established threshold in state law. The talk with Jim, because he wasn't here and he got volunteered, I think, to contact Perpetua and people down at Rough and Ready. And then I called John Krause at Indian Hill and asked, well, what do they do? And they said, well, we don't do it on cubic feet per acre per year. They do it on board feet. And they said if they can get 230 board feet, then they would consider having it in their inventory. And 230 board feet is just under 20 cubic feet per acre per year. So when I talked to them at length, they said, well, at 230 board feet, yes, they're managing, but they're not going to acquire property that's that low unless there's a number of other factors involved, meaning that they own adjoining property so they can manage it together with another unit that they already have under their system. Or if it is a larger piece, like over 80 acres. So a 40-acre piece at 230 board feet, they wouldn't consider it for buying and for managing for that. But that's around the 20. So there is no real definitive answer.
So they didn't set a limit for what they would consider as a standard.
Right. They didn't have that. They said they would look at those on a case-by-case basis to see what they would feel is appropriate to add into their timber harvest. When I looked at Jackson County to see exactly what they have a lot of documentation that they went through as a part of rural use. Malcolm and I sent things back and forth. Some places they say 20, some places they say 50. And when I look at the adopted elements of the comprehensive plan, they still use site index. It didn't happen. When I talked to Douglas County, they clearly said 50 cubic feet is their standard for commercial forestry. They have a couple of minor mixed farm forest uses that go down to 20, but it's not commercial timberland per se. So it would be kind of difficult to come up and make a blanket statement in Josephine County that here's where we make it, unless it's a policy decision and the board goes through some kind of analysis or, you know, recommendation to say what they feel is the threshold that they want to use to identify that threshold between forest and non-forest. And what they can do based on this is say, we want to use the IRR system in conjunction with, after having put down the cubic foot per acre per year, we will use those other factors as part of the IRR system to say whether it's good or not good for timber management, commercial forestry or not. The difficult thing comes about if there is a lot of soil in Josephine County that has no rating whatsoever. It is not in the IRR system. It is not in the NRCS system. That is the conclusion, and that's the assumption, but I've been to LUBA on a number of cases, and LUBA's finding has been, it doesn't say. And if it doesn't clearly say that it's not forest land, then you can't make that assumption. Because when you read the notes in the soil survey, it says these are not rated as forest lands, but it doesn't say why or that they are non-forest lands.
Can I interject on that subject? Sure. One of the problems with this whole thing is if you've got farmland, it's often not rated for forest because they figure people are going to grow crops. However, it might be excellent forest land. So that's just one more little thing to muddy the water.
Sure. And there's been very few of those. Barren soil is one of those. And the barren soil that's in Josephine County is right along the river in the Lower River Road area, some of the best bottom land in the county. And if you plant trees, they will grow like gangbusters. But they said nobody in their right mind is going to grow trees when you can grow crops in that soil. So it's not rated. And there's about three or four that people consider good timber soils that just aren't rated. But there is almost 40 that are just not in the inventory. And the way the hierarchy was adopted in the state OARs, it says you will use the NRCS data, but if the NRCS data is not available or are shown to be inaccurate, other productivity data may be used using the order of following priority. The Oregon Department of Revenue Western Oregon Site Class Maps. Now, I grabbed a copy of those, and it took a lot of digging to find those site class maps. They were done in the 60s. And it does not do things by soil polygons. What it does is it takes a 40-acre square, and it says it's site index 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that's how they do it. So is that going to be accurate? Probably not. And from a practical standpoint, the old IRR system said if you don't have IRR ratings on property, then you use the combination of proofs by having experts in their field evaluate the property. So you hire a forester. So if it doesn't have an RCS, you might as well just hire the forester because the other things that are out there are not going to be accurate for Josephine County. And then you go out and do an evaluation using a standard format that was developed by the state forestry. And that is called the Oregon Department of Forestry's Technical Bulletin entitled Land Use Planning Notes dated April 28, 1998 and updated for clarity in 2010. It's a document that I can also provide to everybody. It's very technical, and depending on if you're for or against a project, you can try and use this to beat things up. Because it says you should use 25 dominant or co-dominant trees as a minimum to set a standard to go evaluate. So then you measure the breast height and do a core boring and figure out how many cubic feet are in that tree to analyze if it's good, bad, or indifferent to get a site index or a cubic feet per acre per year. but it says should, and there's a place back further. It says at the discretion of the forester, if he feels that there's adequate information, you don't have to use 25 trees. But at first read, people come in and say, you didn't do the 25 trees, your report isn't adequate, and therefore you can't use it. And there's other techniques that can be used by foresters, and if you don't have the 25 trees or you don't have things on the lot, you can go to surrounding properties and look at those trees. And then we get into the issue of trespass. Are you authorized to go on adjoining properties? And is that going to be representative or indicative of what is going to grow on this piece of property? Because when you're making a change in the zoning, whether it be farm or forest or non-resource land, it's supposed to be the subject property and not just what's around it. And those are these other factors that you can bring into it.
One more little note, if you don't mind. I don't think there's too many pieces of land around here that have dominant trees left after they've been logged.
A lot of them don't. Some of them you use the dominant trees and the co-dominant trees that come up from the second growth. So you can figure out how they're doing from the reprod. But are you going to find a bunch of virgin timber in Josephine County? Probably not. And when you start getting into real issues, you know, talking to foresters and looking at, you know, the goals of property owners, a lot of people talk about a 50-year rotation or an 80-year rotation or even a 100-year rotation. A lot of the stuff that people are talking about here to try and get any kind of production that would really get loads to the mill, you're talking 125 to 150 year rotations. And when you're talking about rotations that are that long, you say, are there commercial timber interests that want to invest in that land for that long of rotation? And the answer is generally, no, I'm not going to invest in that long a rotation. An 80 acre rotation? Yes, because they're looking at, you know, perpetuating the business. But when you've got to hold land for that long, over 125 years before you can do a rotation, then their return starts, you know, diminishing. So this is a really complex process and product. And the question is, how is the county going to deal with it? Because you can't just take the IRR system that the county always used and say, this is the system that we are going to use, because the new OAR say you can't just use it. Now, we can try and do a conversion factor and say, we're going to readopt the IRR and change and do site index and do a conversion into cubic feet per acre per year and say, what was then is now, and the guiding factors lead us to the same conclusion that an IRR of less than 3.5 is not commercial forest land. That can be done, but we've had a lot of land use activists come through and say the IRR system is out of date and you shouldn't be using it because stumpage factors have changed, harvest costs have changed, and you've got to redo the whole darn system. And the state, when the county finally got the IRR system reapproved, said, we're not going to go through this again and recalculate everything. If you're going to abandon the IRR system, abandon completely, we don't want to do any modifications to it at all. So the conversion factor is the only thing that can be used.
Jim?
A lot of this is so species driven, for one thing. And the second part of this is you can have a 40-year rotational in O'Brien, which gets 19 inches more rain than Grants Pass a year. Mm-hmm. And you can have 120-acre up here on Granite Hill. So that's the site indexing. And then the other thing is the word forest and commercial timber are two different things. Commercial forest could be a woodlot that has madrone and oak that somebody's trying to get some commercial value out of. But I look at it as commercial timberland. And if you look at the 1937 ONC Act, it doesn't say commercial sustainable forest. It says sustainable timber. And so there's a major difference in what we're talking about if we're talking about timber or we're talking about forest. And also on site classification, if it's a commercial, I mean, there are such things as commercial woodlot. I think you'd agree to that.
Yeah, but it's defined definitely here as commercial tree species, which are the conifers. They're not going to consider oak and madrone as a commercial tree species, even though, you know, I know I've talked to Orville Kemp for years and years and years, decades, and he's talking about whole harvest management to include madrone, oaks, and anything else in his scheme, but that's not been what the state has adopted. It says commercial timberland.
Right, and that's what I'd like to keep a focus on is commercial timberland, because we're talking about cedars and we're talking about evergreens. We're not talking about those other species. But again, you get into an argument with Luba over this, and all of a sudden it comes up with old growth forests. And they don't talk about old growth timber, they talk about old growth forests.
But Luba said the local jurisdiction can use these other factors to include, you know, rainfall and those other things that you take the same kind of soil for, you know, in of itself, you're going to have a whole lot different cubic feet per acre per year if it's a south-facing slope as opposed to a north-facing slope. Usually, there is a difference in the soil designation, and it will have those kind of factors in it. So the soil in O'Brien is not going to be the same soil that's up on Granite Hill, because one of the factors in identifying soil is the precipitation, and there's a break at 35 inches per year.
That's right.
So the
plus cedar grows one way, Doug fir grows another way, sugar pine grows another way, bull pine grows another way, and it could be on the same soils. You got different density as far as your cubic feet per.
And a lot of the soils are dual rated, some for pine and some for fir.
Jack,
I went through an interesting presentation by Professor Cole about it one time. They're making exactly the point that Jim's making, that all of this is species driven and climate controlled. And he was talking about the fallacy involved in forest restoration, that what was a viable forest 80 years ago, owing to climate change, no longer is. Or it has to be adapted. His point being, oak, madrone, and spruce pine are species that are appropriate to light rainfall. When you want to go to fir, you need more rainfall. And of course, for spruce, that demands even more. Predicating a judgment today based upon pain indexes that were developed 40 years ago is ridiculous, because climate changes. It doesn't remain constant. It just seems like a fallacious approach. But having said that, it occurs to me, and I thought I heard a lot of support for the 50 factor, that there's a provision in regarding dwellings. There's a standard adopted by Douglas County, and in some instances it's around Jackson County. And, you know, maybe it's too stringent, but so what?
Well, one of the things that I would say...
I just would like to have us narrow down what it is we're trying to do. I think we all agree it's a really much more complex issue than any statute is really going to successfully address between climate change and two trees growing on the same piece of ground. One, if it happens to be a cedar, does well here, the fir does not. But it's very complex. What is this committee trying to do here? Are we just trying to come up with a number, a cubic foot number? Because we can't address, obviously, way beyond us to redefine the whole definition of commercial forest land. I mean, that's a whole two-year project in itself. So I'd like to see us get down to what it is that we're trying to do. Is it the number that we're trying to get?
Well, I would say it's twofold. One is the county put a lot of effort and a lot of, money for one thing, into the IRR system. I would see us recommending that the board try and reestablish the IRR system if it is applicable to define the difference between forest land and non-forest land, the 3.5 internal rate of return. Because that takes in a lot of other factors besides just rainfall. And I would say if you cannot identify and use the IRR system, then that's where we need to come up with a number and say for Josephine County, this is the number we select as the break between farm and forest. That would be my recommendation. Okay.
Malcolm and Jack.
Okay, Bob, I think we've communicated on this before. Jackson County, refresh my memory, I could have the numbers wrong, but I think they wanted to change the rules going from 50 cubic feet per acre per year to 20, and the Oregon Department of Forestry said no for a whole bunch of reasons, which I won't go into. I think they were okay with 50, so that might be the first one. The other thing is, why are we going looking at cubic feet, or excuse me, site index, trying to convert to cubic feet? Can't we just use the cubic feet that's in the NRCS book? Most of the soils, I don't know if it's all of them, well, the soils that aren't in the forestry tables in the middle of the book, maybe it's not in there either, but I know most of the soils, if you look at them, it says forestry uses will grow 63,000 cubic foot in 60 years. And you divide by 60 and it tells you how many cubic feet per acre per year.
Right. The book tells you one thing, but the new electronic one that you find online says it a bit differently. So they have a cubic feet per acre per year number that comes out of that. And the question, I guess, to the county and to this group is, do you want to just use that as the guiding thing and pick a 50-foot and be done with the IRR system? Because the code says right now, if you are planning for a non-resource determination to try and say it is not forest land, you have to address the IRR system. It, just because the state adopted the NRCS cubic feet, it does not take away the responsibility to apply the IRR. So you've got two competing systems because one says site index and the other one has cubic feet. We could apply the factor and say, yes, here's the conversion, but it's not going to have any real impact on the number that pops out the back, so we still want to use the IRR, or do you want to just walk away from it?
And yet, Roger, I was reviewing those minutes, and Roger, the IRR is out, it's dead from one of those meetings.
Mm-hmm.
He may have said that, but I've been to LUBA before, and there's been no action on the part of the county that says the IRR is dead because the administrative rules just says to identify forest land, you have to use cubic feet per acre per year, but that's where it stops. It doesn't say how you use that to make that identification.
It does say cubic feet per acre per year, not IRR, right?
Right. So if we put in the conversion, we can still use that. And from a practical thing, just because I'm so knowledgeable about that IRR system, is the cubic feet per acre per year is not the only defining factor of whether it's commercial forest land or not. Because
sure.
They put in the economics of the growing, where they talk about seedling mortality, the things that they had to do, whether they had to put XR tubing around to protect the seedlings, whether it's a flat piece of ground where you can harvest using self-loaders, or whether you have to use cable or helicopter logging. Because if you have the same cubic feet per acre per year on flat land and the same cubic feet per acre per year on a 70% slope, one, you're going to make out like a bandit, and the other one, you can lose your shirt.
Sure.
And the IRR system puts those factors into the equation, and I think it's a more complete system. And if we just walked away and said, well, we're not going to use it anymore, I go, is that really helping to identify forest land here in Josephine County?
I have a question.
Yeah, Jack first, then Bill, and then you.
I'm going to go back to, I mean, it's clear that you're enamored with the IRR system. I think I heard you say that an option available to us was to supplement the IRR system. We cannot use it per se alone,
correct,
or any other standard, but we could supplement it with a 50 cubic foot, carry the two, and say, this is what we're going to use.
Yeah, that could be there.
Okay. Bill?
Are currently our tracts of forest land classified? Owner has 160 acres out there. Has that already been classified under a system?
In private lands, most of it.
In the Josephine County Comprehensive Plan, what it says is if the properties are generally 160 acres or larger and have an IRR of 4.0 or above, then it's forest commercial land. If it's generally properties less than 160 acres and more than 40, and it has an IRR of 3.5 or above, then it's woodlot resource. If it is generally smaller than 40 acres and has an IRR of below 3.5, then it is not forest land at all.
Okay. But my question is, how does this relate to our mission to simplify the Rural Land Development Code? I mean, if there's some simple, keep it simple, way that you can put something out that we can send on to planning. Because otherwise, it's just going to make it more, I think it's beyond the scope of this committee.
Jordan?
Well, it seems to me that the cubic feet measurement is something that we have to keep as a standard for the state to buy anything that's going to end up in front of the state. It seems that on a local level that if we're going to get a more accurate analysis of a particular piece of land keeping the IRR system if we can't do that. How is when the subject of our IRR system has come up at Blueville, where somebody's used that to justify that this is not forest land and over summer somebody was appealing it, what has been the response at the state level to the IRR? Did they regard it as a legitimate system?
Yes.
Well, then my recommendation is that we encourage our planning department to continue using that because it gives you more tools in your tool bag to really analyze a piece of property. But that we, because we're expected to fly things at the state, we choose a realistic cubic foot number, which would be apparently 50, certainly not 20.
Margaret?
What about all the soils that you mentioned that are not rated?
It's not rated in the NRCS system either. So what happens?
Anything that's rated in the IRR is also rated in the NRCS and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
For the most part,
so
yeah. How the county deals with it at that point, there's a provision if you're going for zone change that you bring in alternative information that's more accurate based on site specific.
The soil scientist.
Yeah, the soil scientist, a forester. And that's also in the state provisions. It says where the NRCS factors the cubic feet per acre per year, if the property owner feels they are inaccurate, he can have the forester go out and do direct measurement, and that's where that handbook that describes the methodology is used for him to go out and check it. And that's where that number that Jack mentioned, you know, the 50 and the one that you talked about, 50, that's where it would take hold for the most part, because you don't have an IRR, you don't have an NRCS, you've got something that is neither one, but it's a direct measurement, and he may come up and say, it turns out that this is 27.6 cubic feet per acre per year because I measured the trees. Because it doesn't fall into either system, and then that still doesn't tell the county, other than the professional opinion of the forester, is this suitable for commercial timber management? And he'll say, in my estimation it is, or in my estimation it's not, based on this cubic, or on this direct measurement that I checked the trees on. So if we adopted 50 to deal with those, that would make it simpler, instead of just having an opinion by somebody that's not we would have a subjective or an objective standard instead of a subjective standard.
Well, that seems reasonable. Okay. I mean, the 50 with the IRR is
reasonable. I think what I hear here, in terms of our mission to facilitate this process, is that we would like to deal with the issue once. So if you have a yardstick defined as IRR plus 50, and the individual and the planning commission have complied with that, then it should go to LUBA once and be done. Whereas where you have a fuzzy and a wobbly sort of measurement, it goes to LUBA, and maybe it works, and maybe it's back to be done again. And so what I think I hear is the request for a definitive standard to be used by planning commissions and all that.
I guess to sort of bring this to a final would be, probably it would be proper for this committee to make a recommendation to the Board of Commissioners to maintain the IRR system and to add the 50 cubic feet per year per acre as a part of the analysis or the process, and ask them to have the planning department prepare the necessary documents to implement them.
And that would be for the soils that are not rated by either the NRCS or the IRR system, which none of which are going to be commercial forests.
Yeah.
So my question would be, Malcolm, because he's on the planning commission, would that help you guys to be able to make a better decision?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
That's part of it. By LUBA or by LCDC, you
can
get
it. See, if,
I think.
Because the Clark decision that came out of Jackson County, what LUBA says is if you have a rationale to come to a conclusion that you've adopted, then they will give difference for that conclusion. They're not going to substitute their judgment for yours. So if we adopted 50, they're not going to come back and say, well, gee, I understand your 50, but I'm not quite sure that that's quite right. We're going to figure out 40. LUBA does not do that. LUBA says, what does it say?
But you mentioned something in the first year presentation about LUBA looking to Oregon Department of Forestry, didn't you, for their advice on what?
Well, that was in their rationale, and that's when they came up and said, clearly, under 20,
right,
no way. And just because it has to be replanted does not mean that it's commercial forest land.
How much weight is LCDC going to put into Oregon Department of Forestry's opinions, if any, do you think?
They're going to consider it, absolutely.
Because the thing with Jackson County, when they turned them down on the 20, that doesn't look so good for going to 50.
They turned them down on 20,
but they were okay. They wanted to change if I'm remembering this right, I should go pull these papers. I think they wanted to change it from 20 to 50, and ODF said, number one, that would cost the state millions of acres or millions of board feet, I don't remember, of timber. They would no longer be considered forest land. And number two, there's other issues like wildlife.
Well, that's a huge difference. I'd like to know which way it was, because when somebody said that earlier,
Exactly, now you want to go from 15 to 20. I'm thinking, why would they do that? Why would they? I said that backwards. Oh, okay. There was not a definitive decision on dropping it to 20 and saying 50 was wrong. They had some opinions saying that we think it's okay to drop it to 20, but there was no hard line that says 50 is not acceptable.
You need to raise it to 50, right? Not to drop it to 20.
Scott might have a different recollection of this, because you keep saying drop it from 50 to 20, and Bob keeps saying raise it. I mean, you keep saying raise it from 20 to 50, and Bob keeps saying drop it from 50 to 20. So it sounds like you both have a different
recollection of what it was. Because there was a lot of discussions that went on there, and a lot of it was staff opinions, and it was not decisions by the decision makers of the county, because Rawl wrote some of those letters, and it was just a staff discussion of what it was.
I'd like to get to some kind of a recommendation, and if people are comfortable with utilizing the 50, this whole IR system was based upon all the data and statistics that came out of the Department of Forestry. Larry Brown, when he put it together, used the Department of Forestry's own data and information. And when they tried to battle it, they found out it was their information. They became very supportive of this IRR system. And the only one that was complaining about it was the director, who was Jim Ross at the time. And his complaint on that was he was afraid it was going to address the whole state of Oregon. And we were the only county in the state of Oregon that actually came up with a classification of our forest soils that was workable. And his concern was it was going to open the door for everybody. And so they tried to keep it limited to just Josephine County alone. So all the data in IRR is data from the state of Oregon Department of Forestry, their own experts. There was, I sat in that room with all the state forestry people and the scientists, and when they found out where that information came from, they were there to tear it apart, and the next thing we know, they were there supportive of it, because it was their own information.
Well, I support the IRR plan, but if we're going to cubic feet per acre per year, it's a whole other thing with all these opinions. I don't know how far it is.
What we're recommending, I think, at least this is where we're headed. So we keep the IRR system, which is in Table 10, right, or 6, I was getting confused, that are already rated.
I'm all for that.
Okay? Yeah. But then we apply the 50 to all the ones who are not listed, which the soils book clearly says that only the commercial soils are in the table. So the logical assumption is those that are not listed in the table are not commercial soils. So the ones that they'll use the cubic feet per year will be the ones that are not rated in the IRR system, most of which are not going to make the 50. So the 50 or 20, it's sort of irrelevant.
That's what you're saying.
You see? So the 50 cubic feet per year is only applying to those soils that are not listed as commercial forestry soils in the soils book.
Right.
Okay.
I heard it very differently, and I recommended something very different than you just said.
Okay.
I heard the comment in reading from the Lubitz. IRR by itself is inadequate.
Yes, because it doesn't say
you must supplement with something else specifically going to feed provision. But if we're going to retain the IRR, otherwise you got to throw it away.
This is true, but what's the point of keeping the IRR if you're also having soil scientists going, or foresters going out there and measuring trees?
You would only do that in the case where there is no IRR.
That was my point.
But that's where we are now.
That's my point. If there's if a particular soil has an IRR rating, let's say 3.5 or above, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we don't need to do anything else.
Except we have to show conversion to cubic feet, because the state wants to see
cubic feet.
But Bob is saying there is a direct conversion. So we, for local purposes, did we continue to use the IRR because it is more comprehensive.
With
but because the state, when it's going to show up to them, they want it in a cubic feet number, we can do a conversion
okay,
on
so
those properties that have an IRR. those properties that don't have an IRR, then you're going to have to get the forester to show what the cubic feet thing is, and the IRR becomes...
So let me restate it. We use the IRR system by converting it across to cubic feet per year.
Per acre.
They don't convert directly like that. For the reason Bob laid out.
Okay. Peggy and then Jack.
I just want to make the motion.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Jack.
I would move that we recommend to the Board of Commissioners that we make the appropriate changes, or have the planning department make the appropriate changes, proposals, to the comprehensive plan, speaking to the use of the IRRs as they exist and supplemented by a standard of 50 cubic feet per year.
Correct.
Okay, I guess one of the thoughts would be is to include in that I would sit with Bob Hart and draft the letter that would go to them, so that we would be very specific in the language to assist them in moving it forward. Because Bob's been working on it, and I think he can give us the kind of language that we need, and the letter would come from me as the board chair on behalf of the committee. Is that acceptable as part of your discussion? Okay.
I think a useful task might be, Bob saying that the cubic feet per acre per year on the website is different than what's in the book?
In some cases, yes.
It would be interesting to see, of those listed in Table 10, what the bottom is, you know, what the lowest cubic feet per acre per year is. It would be interesting to see how low they go before then they no longer listed, they no longer rated. That's how many soils? 168?
I don't know.
The ones that are rated, I think there's 53.
Just 53 rated?
Okay. Out of the 160, I think.
So there's over 100 that are not rated.
Something.
By both the NRCS and the IRR.
Yeah, and I can give you the background on that. It's part of a memo that I can send out and work on the draft.
Okay, and what I would do is make sure when you got it together is to get it out to you folks to see if there's any changes or things that you feel ought to be put into that.
Idea.
So, more discussion?
Yeah, I appreciate what we're trying to do, but I'm confused because, like you said, the last piece of ground was 50 cubic feet per acre per year. It's going to be real commercial, and a steep one's not. Well, what does that do with the IRR? It seems like we're emasculating it for the soils that are rated IRR, aren't we?
If it's rated by our IRR and it's that flat ground, you're going to have a higher IRR, and it's going to be considered as forest land. Where the IRR comes in is those higher rated ones that you're going to not economically be able to manage and make profit. And so it's going to bring those down.
What I'm saying is you can have two pieces of land that both have 50 or 49 or whatever. One of them might be a good IRR and one of them might be a bad IRR, right?
Well, what we're saying is it would have to meet both standards.
Okay, I'm just saying we're screwing it up.
You know, from what I heard Jack say is to have a supplement that if it has an IRR, that's the defining
that's not
thing to use.
I thought
and
said,
if there is no IRR, then it's the 50.
I'm fine with that. I thought you said we had to supplement the IRR.
That's what I thought.
With the 50.
We do a conversion that says what it translates out to cubic feet, but the IRR is still the same. It's those extra factors that we use no matter what the cubic feet per acre says.
So you're saying we use the IRR. The IRR is less than 3.50. It's not forest land, even if the cubic feet per acre is 60 or 70.
Correct. Correct.
Then why are we even dealing with the cubic feet per acre?
If we don't throw that in there, they will not accept it.
Well, but you better not say 50 cubic feet per acre minimum because you're going to throw out a bunch of land that shouldn't be, it sounds like.
Malcolm is saying is that if you try to make it a... the IRR, unless the IRR doesn't give us the result we want, we then use the 50, that ain't going to work. You're wasting your time. You're just back trying to restore the IRR, which may be laudable. You're going to have to use both if you're going to supplement the IRRs and salvage the IRRs.
Peggy?
I don't think that was what he was. Now, we all seem to be hearing what Rob was saying differently. But what I thought that he was saying was that there that the NCRF one, that there is a that using that, then you can get to the cubic feet per year, and you just have to provide the number, if it's 50 or whatever. Now, that the IRRs, there's a direct, there's a conversion between IRRs and NCRF, and but the IRR is not really dependent on cubic. So if you had, please correct me if I'm not understanding correctly, but my understanding is that if you have an actual, say, 50 cubic feet on flat land and 50 cubic feet on slope, the IRRs are going to be different. So this one's going to be rated higher than this one. Now, that means that they will convert differently into the NCRS. They'll convert to different NCRS ratings. Is that correct?
No, the NRCS rating stays the same. You're going to have 50 mm-hmm. whether it's that or that, mm-hmm. but the IRR says this stuff up here is below the 3.5 and it shouldn't be good.
I thought you said that there was a mapping that you could do between the IRRs to the NRCS without.
I think he was talking about
side
index to cubic feet.
Side index to cubic feet.
I'm seeing more and more problems.
Well.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I just got one kind. I think we're going to have to be very careful here because I'm already seeing issues. Okay, suppose that because the IRR system, the NRCS says it produces 85 cubic feet per acre per year, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's on extremely steep slopes which have to be helicoptered out and have to be transported 100 miles to any place, right? Okay, but the NRCS says, the IRR system says it's like 3.25, which does not qualify it for forest land any longer. It's below 3.5 on the IRR system. But then the NRCS says over 50 cubic feet per acre per year. So how are we going to... I mean, how can you really... They complement each
other. That's
exactly
why we want to keep the IRR.
Exactly.
Because you could have something that under whichever system you come up with a cubic foot number that shows up theoretically being this wonderful commercial forest land, but in fact it's totally impractical, uneconomical to develop. And that's why just doing it on a cubic foot basis is not going to ever give you an accurate...
But see, what Jack is saying is to supplement, to work the two together, and I don't see how that...
I would say that if there is an IRR, it has to meet both the 3.5 and the 50 cubic foot, or it's not cute commercial timber.
Well, that was the problem I was just pointing
out. And
if
there is no IRR, then you go to the 50 cubic foot as your standard. And if you, as a property owner, want to get a soil scientist or a forester to come in and say, yeah, it's 60 cubic feet, but the 60 cubic feet for jack pine or something that there's no commercial market for or something like that, then you're going to have to go beyond that. But for all the stuff that's mapped, to me, it's just, it has to meet both. It has to meet 3.5 and it has to meet 50 cubic feet, or it's not. And if it ends up in Lubin, they say, well, wait a minute, this thing has a cubic foot rating of 80, then you bring out all the reasons why, well, that's great, it grows the trees, great, maybe. But you're going to cause soil erosion, you're going to have to build roads, you're going to have to spend a huge amount of... It's not... And I mean, by definition, I know this is getting a little bit too realistic for state bureaucrats, but by definition, commercial logging has to make a dollar. Just
duh.
That's what Lucas said.
Margaret?
Okay, what I'm confused now is that I thought I heard that the state says you must base the determination on a
They didn't say you had to make a determination. It says you have to map it and show what that number is. And then you can bring other factors to bear to say, is it commercial or not?
I said, so they did not say that you have to base for commercial on the number. They're saying you have to know the number.
Right.
You can use some other determination that's not one of the ones they listed there.
Right.
Well, then I totally agree. We should map it to the number and then throw the number and give
you IR. What I'd like to do with the motion is follow with the motion and then have us draft a document for you all to look at. And if you have some issues, make sure you address those with the written document so we have it in front of us and it sort of lays it out. And if it got some problems.
Can Ann read it back to us?
Huh?
Yes, we recommend to the Board of County Commissioner changes to the comp plan for the use of the IRR as it exists to supplement by standard of 50 cubic feet per acre per year.
Very good.
I would like to make a different motion.
You can't. There's a motion on the floor.
Because it sounds, I misunderstood that what he was saying, because I had understood that you have to have a standard of how many cubic feet per year. And if we don't have to have a standard, I don't think we should include a standard. I think we should map it to that because they want that information, but just treat that as data and make the standard still based on the IRR. It seems like if we throw in the 50 as a standard, then we're defeating the purpose of using the IRR.
Check.
Response to both. As to Peggy's heard and questioned before, is that if we're to retain the IRRs, we need to supplement with this cubic foot standard.
But just the data, not the standard.
The cubic foot data.
Data, not the standard, just the data. I originally understood what you understood. And that was what I agree with and seconded your motion. But now I understand it.
What is
the standard?
There is no standard.
No, there is a standard.
And not the IRR.
A standard is a big one.
Right. And you don't need rules.
And they're ruling 95% in favor.
That's what I thought I understood too, but I understand it differently now. We don't need to have a cubic foot per acre per year.
Well, the way Jack's motion reads, it only says that we supplement the IRR, so that
with that data, but it says a standard now in what I read back, and I think that we should say we supplement it with the data, not use the 50 as a standard.
Is that what you really meant, Jack?
I'm going to withdraw the motion.
Second withdraw. Okay, so no more. There's no motion on the floor. So.
I recommend that obviously we think about it some more. Maybe if you draft something. And we can think about
it.
Email it to us and let us think about it.
Is that how you like to proceed with this?
Because my understanding of it changed.
Okay. Right. Well, we'll do this.
I will try and make it very clear of what is a standard, what is not a standard, what is required, what is not required.
Perfect.
Okay.
And
so
this is kind of.
Can I just clarify one thing that I think I understand now? That all the state requires is that we provide the data of how many cubic feet per year per acre are on the property, but that we don't have to use that data in determining whether the property is or is not commercial forest land. No. We can instead, we just have to provide the data, but we can use another standard, and then it's perfectly okay to continue using the IRR as the standard.
But
and if that understanding is correct, then that's what I think we should do, Bob, is that correct?
Well, I guess that, again, it comes back to, does what we're talking about make it is it more complex or simpler for the applicant coming in to meet the requirements of the law? Are we being more complex than the state law requires? Jack?
The IRRs are at this point at risk. What we're talking about is preserving them.
Mm-hmm.
The provision that Peggy's proposing of simply throwing some more data into the mix does not accomplish the purpose that I had in mind when I made the motion. The purpose was that when this thing went to LUBA, it had something definitive to be measured against so that it didn't keep coming back. Thank you, Mike Walker.
But the IRR?
Yeah. Well, we're going to do this. We're going to have a draft put together, have it e-blast it out to you folks, add whatever you feel needs to be or ask questions, and then we'll
we all
taking action on
to think about it more.
Yeah. I think it's only fuzzy, the IRA only fuzzy for unrated soils, and for unrated soils, then we could use the 50,000.
That's how Luba says. Well, Luba's confused on it.
But that would be
it's unfortunate they're not experts other than the fact that they do carry weight.
50,000 for unrated soils, and otherwise...
Unprofessional. So that's where we're going to stop at this point on this issue, is Bob will draft up what he understands just to be, get it out to everybody, have a look at it, get your comments back, and then we can go from there and see where we want to go. Okay.
Hope the next one's further than that.
It is.
Adjournment?
Yeah. Yes, the next meeting is the issue. Matters from committee members, any subcommittees? None?
Nope.
Okay, that's okay. Other matters, access permits expiring with no development of property.
We talked about that already.
What was the deal on that one?
After 3 years, if you don't develop the property, you need to go get another access permit.
Yeah. There was some discussion on that.
Then it's 3 months.
Yeah.
Oh.
So does anybody have any recollection on that one?
I thought we adopted something that extended that time period.
Yeah, that's my
idea.
Yeah.
Why does it need to expire?
It
doesn't.
Yeah,
we were discussing what constituted actual development and progress in discussion. I can't remember what.
Well, I think the board took some action on that, if I remember right.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah,
we in fact, we were there. So that's taken care of.
Well, I had to leave immediately after that.
Yeah. Federal management plan coordinating with land use rules.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
It's land use rules.
It's land use rules.
Land.
JS.
Hey, I like that. It's like La La Land.
Jack Swift.
Sure.
It has your initials on it.
You're on the agenda here.
Indeed.
The Resource Coordination Committee tasked with developing a coordination plan. This my in controversy and at this contentious topics of mining and timber delivery plans. So I would be extremely reluctant to additional on their plate. I don't think they can handle it.
Okay.
Can Jack share with us what the resolution was so that the commissioners did approve on coordination?
Well, the commissioners have issued finally a resolution that requiring the federal agencies land in Josephine County that they coordinate with Josephine County.
Cool.
That's a year's get that accomplished.
Well, that's great.
And that was unanimous.
All three commissioners.
Good. Okay, next item is the section 60.060, clarify language, Ray, not in statute, not legal with land use, BH.
I don't remember that one.
We're all having old energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what happens when you don't meet every month, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll try to review that for next time. It has something to do with vacation rentals. If it's not in the statute, then, you know, we just ignore it and we can...
Thank you for you. You did it again. Very good.
She takes notes.
Yeah.
But she remembers, too. Right?
So that is becoming an issue and has become how you're going to deal with if you own property out there that you want to rent to somebody for other purposes like weddings or... music or some of those things that in fact is illegal in, I think it was Jackson County where this happened.
Yeah, they closed it down.
And because there's no language in the statute, that means it's not capable of being.
But I think Josephine County, remember I pointed out, Josephine County does have language that gives it some flexibility, but we were thinking about maybe clarifying that because so far it's a matter of interpretation.
Is it conditional use? Is that what it is currently?
Oh, what I'm talking about is but it uses a lot where it's permitted if there's a statement, and I forgot where it was, but that says basically if it's a similar use, even if it's not listed, it can be approved.
I see. So you got the big issue out there, especially with the guy with the tree stuff.
Yeah, I'm not
Michael Garnier.
Mm-hmm.
He's out and using his properties for rental purposes and recreation. And
well, he went beyond the scope of the three that he had approved that is permitted.
I'm not saying, you know, that he got it, but is that it's interesting because the night before last, on one of the major television stations, they had a half-hour show on out and about, or whatever they call that thing, on the trees. And they had a nice interview with Michael and showed all of the houses that he's got in the trees, the one that's way up there, it's the house, major house. And, of course, only five of them are legal, if I remember right. And, but these people are all complimenting him and congratulating him. And
did they mention the lawsuit to the person that stole
it? No, they did not. But anyway, that's an ongoing issue. But Jack?
The hearing officer over there, Rubenstein, addressed the issue of whether, I mean, what's the proper rule of law under the current plan? Is the presumption that it's not prohibited, you can do it, or is the presumption that the code must authorize it before you can do it? And those were the two propositions and what we're discussing.
Mm-hmm.
And the opinion of Rubenstein was that in the absence of some authority granting permission to use your land, you cannot. And I think that's problematic, and I would like to see our comp plan establish the alternative standard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's why. I mean, my opinion on that is that, you know, in the 80s or the 90s, you make a list, you're allowed to do boom, 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 boom. And then in the 2000s and the 2010s, business changes, uses change, and you're stuck. 20 years ago, there's no incentive for, development, even conservation moves.
Improvisation.
Improvisation, exactly. Creativity's out the door.
Hmm. Peggy?
I think that's fundamental to being in America, that freedom is the baseline, that you're restricted from doing something that could infringe on the rights of your neighbors or other people. But barring specific restrictions, you know, if we start from the point that everything is disallowed and the only things allowed are the specific privileges that the state grants you, that's not freedom. That's the opposite. I think we have to start from we're a free people, and if there are specific things that the state needs to restrict in order to protect the rights of others, the state can restrict those. And that's two fundamentally different philosophies. But one is the state controls everything and grants the individual specific privileges, and the other is that we're specific restrictions allowed by the state, and I think that's the direction that we need to go.
I would agree.
Okay. Does anybody want to take this on as a project at this point in time?
I think we had the same response.
Go for it.
Yes.
Just clarify the language. Don't look at me, I'm too tired.
Okay, seeing none, the issue's dead at this point.
Okay.
Moving on, I've had, there's some emails that came in. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to ask, can I bring something up under a committee member?
Mm-hmm.
Remember I emailed everybody about talking to Wally Hicks? And
that's what I was going to talk about. Grace had emailed out and I was wondering whether it would be a value for us to have Jason Atkinson and Wally Hicks and Richardson come to our meeting and have a dialogue or discussion on land use issues, state v. local. Get an understanding from them as representatives of the state for them to hear what our issues may be in the conflicts that we're running into in land use. Is that a topic we would like to have brought, or not a topic, but a group that we would like to invite at the November meeting?
You want to invite them all at once or one at a time?
All at once.
I think that way they all get the same message and we hear. I'm not sure that we'll get Jason, but Richardson and Hicks have been very acceptable to coming to meetings.
I move that we invite.
Okay.
Okay.
There's a second?
I second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion adopted. Okay, the only other issue that I had is that we had a Land Conservation Development Commission hearing here in Josephine County back on last Thursday, and it's where the full commission came down to Southern Oregon. It's the only time, I don't believe they've ever been in Josephine County since I've ever been involved in land use, but they've been in Ashland and they've been in Medford, so it was actually a hysterical or historical event.
Freudian slip.
Yeah, something like that. But it was really well worth sitting in on and participating. And one of the big issues was the soil assessments, making rules to meet the requirements of House Bill 3647, which requires the state of Oregon to come up with DLC, a process by which to create certification for soil scientists and what's the other name?
Soil classifiers.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the process of this rule, was to come up with a means by which DLCD would take on this task. And it's going to be cumbersome, but the big thing about the bill was that some of the language and some of the things they're requiring are sort of overstepping their authority, I guess, is what on my mind. And one of the key ones, of course, was the word person, that went to person, the whole thing, that the person could buy an assessment, soil assessment on a piece of property, doesn't necessarily have to be the owner, and would then go to the state of Oregon, say, I want a soil assessment. The state of Oregon would provide that person with a list of the soil assessor, classifiers or scientists. That person would then look at that list and get a bid or some kind of a cost and decide on which one they wanted, and then go back to the state and say, this is who I want to have do the soil classification or assessment, and here's my check for what they're requiring, and pay the state. The state would then put it into an account, and then the state would then contact the soil scientist assessor, classifier, and have a contract with that person.
Why?
for them to then go out and do the soil assessment, and then that person would then return the report to the state. It is not public records, it's a private record, and the state would then keep that record until at such point there was some kind of a land use action on the property, and then they would release it to the county.
I see why you said hysterical.
And this is real. I mean, this is there was one, two, three, four, five of us that went to that meeting, and I participated and presented a letter from the State Association of Realtors. But the fortunate thing is that the commission chose not to act on the rules until this next December, which I was major, because they were headed for an actual approval of the rules, which are written out already. And Jack did an excellent job in his testimony. Jim, Bob was really excellent. He had an excellent testimony. The planning director from Douglas County provided excellent testimony. There was a soil scientist from Douglas County.
Was that Dennis? Oh, good.
That provided some really good testimony. And I think based upon that, it raised enough questions over the legal issues. And the fact that a person could go on somebody's property and a landowner would never know about it, because that person, the way it's written here, would be able to go out there and make a
house.
Isn't that 100% illegal?
Well, what I was told is that it's not illegal if you, as a property owner, if he's on your property and you're not there, then he's okay. But if you see him on the property and you tell him to leave, then it becomes trespass. That's what I was told. But no matter what, the definition of person, and Keith Kubik brought that up, includes everybody, including DLCD. As a person could go and have a report done and pay for it, and hold on to that report until the landowner or the property owner decided to do a land lease action.
Why would anybody do that?
But this passed, let me tell you, this passed almost unanimously in both the House and the Senate. There were only two people in Southern Oregon that voted against it. One was Gerard, and the other one was Whitsett from Klamath County. Both of them from Klamath County.
Wally
and
Hicks,
one of the
Dennis Richardson voted.
Wally Hicks wasn't in. It was March. It was February of 2010. So it was Maurer and Atkinson.
They didn't understand.
Well, it was presented by It was presented by the Farm Bureau and the Thousand Friends of Oregon, and the main thrust of it is apparently there's somebody in the state that does soil assessment work that'll do it for and come up with whatever it is for the money that you're willing to pay for. He'll give you whatever report you want. And so they use that as for a basis of...
Well, there's only three or four in the whole state.
There's six.
Okay. But, you know, that why do that? Why don't they just have a... You know, for it to do a zone change, it has to go to the state anyway, and they have to evaluate the soils report. Why go through this back forth?
To the state and have the state contact them.
They don't have money.
And then they
have
to give the report to the state. That is the wackiest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. Jack?
It's all an issue of putting DLCD in control.
Absolutely.
All of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes to the credibility of the evidence in the soil report. And it's bad. What the DLCD has preordained as being credible, you can't know because you don't have any evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was trying to get to on this is that the Association of Oregon Counties did not play a role in it. They did have somebody sitting at the table when they were drafting the bill, but they did not take an official position on it. Some of the planners support this. I think Jackson County Planner supported it. Josephine County Planner supports it. Clackamas. There were a few folks. At this point, the only one that actually came out and spoke in opposition to it was the Douglas County Planner, Keith Kubik. There is a planner from Union County, I believe, that sits on the commission, who has pretty good head on his shoulders, I think. Hanlon Jenkins. What I'm wondering is whether this committee would want to make a recommendation to the board that at some point that this be reintroduced, this bill be reintroduced and repealed and come up with a better solution than what's out there at this point in time. The reason I bring it up is because the board of commissioners at this point will be going to the Association of Oregon Counties has their annual convention in November. Yes, I'm not sure the dates, but they could take this issue to the AOC conference and have the AOC take a position on this issue of repealing or whatever it might be, and then that would then give some strength to making this change. Because this is really, in my belief, is that it's a real slap in the face, one to the counties and two to the property owners. Mm-hmm. Should be the other way around. One to the property owners and second to the counties. But anyway, I think it's a real travesty that's happened. So I'd like some discussion on that.
I'd like to make a motion that this body take that to the County Board of Commissioners and ask them to carry that to the AOC and ask them to revisit the language on that by repealing it.
Okay. Yeah. The motion.
Can I amend that with
you
a friendly amendment? And give notification of that on the board to our local representatives.
Legislators.
I second it.
Okay. Discussion. Gordon?
Well, I fully support the intent of what we're trying to do here because I agree that it's ridiculous. On the other hand, I don't see it as being part of what we were tasked to do, so if we can do it in some way that we submit a letter as a consensus agreement or something, but what we're tasked to do here is to look at the county's comprehensive planning to see where it's more restrictive than necessary state. This doesn't really fall in that. So like I say, it's not that I don't agree with it, and I wouldn't like to see us going on record, but I think we have to do it in a different way than we do the other stuff, so...
I think the key is
how we can word it that it was, you know, the consensus of the committee that we go on record or something, rather than we put it in the same format as the other things that we're doing.
We're
drifting outside the lines here.
Yeah.
I think, again, the bottom line, our mission is that we need to try to make our system a more accessible and easier system for the property owner and the landowner, for the applicant. And I agree that the final mission is, of course, the conflicts between our local law and the state laws.
Mm-hmm.
But consensus, if it's a consensus that we ought to provide some recommendation or comments to the Board of Commissioners that this should be sent to the Association of Oregon Counties for them to, I guess, repeal HB 3647 mm-hmm. and submit some documentation to the same documentation to the legislative, our legislative people. And I'm mm-hmm. playing around, but it's come up with some kind of language. What I would do is put something together and, again, run it by you folks so that you feel comfortable that I could send it out as the chairperson. And again, it's...
Harold, could I just say one thing and comment? And so that, you know, it says, actually, they had adopted this, our legislature, in 2010 to be take effect October 1st this year.
Well, I know they did it as an emergency.
An emergency. And so, yeah, I was thinking to myself, all the more reason why, if we could, as a consensus, to get that, because now they're going to meet every year at the legislative session when we got a chance in February.
Well, I totally agree. I just want to make sure that we don't drift out the lines as to what outside the lines.
I appreciate that.
Something along the line of it has come to the attention of the committee, and the committee wishes to land development regulation.
I know that the board had a little bit of discussion with the planning director, and it didn't feel that there was a whole lot of concern on this issue, but I think it's an important issue to address at this point. And there's an easier, probably better way for them to deal with this whole soil assessment issue. But Malcolm, you were there. I don't know how you're.
I don't want to take credit for this law coming into effect, but I did testify several times before the planning or the Board of Commissioners saying we need some way for more people to look at these land use applications in order for opponents and especially in order for the Planning Commission to get more than one view, because he who pays the piper calls the tin. So if you hired a soil scientist or a forester, he's not going to come and say that this isn't forest land, this is farmland, or at least some of them aren't. So I was suggesting we need some way to do that, but that's mm-hmm. not the way. Mm-hmm. We're not to say you can just go onto somebody's land, especially with all this other bureaucratic baloney. I'm not in favor of that, but I can't vote yay or nay without reading the bill myself. And I want to propose OAR. I'd like to see it.
Yeah.
It sounds terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You got a copy to take home?
Or? You can take this home if you want. Or just got this. You can take it home if you want.
Great.
Do you have a proposed rule for it or just the
bill?
I think I've got a proposal.
There's the rules.
Okay.
So anyway, with that understanding, then we'll draft, I'll put together some comments to send to the Board of County Commissioners and run it around. Yeah. Grace, I'm sorry.
I would like to make a recommendation, because I'm kind of understand where Malcolm's coming from, because when I was with the county, I mean, there is actually, I understand the purported justification for this sort of thing, but it's gone way overboard. There is at least one soil classifier whom I don't trust. And when I was still at the county, he was involved with the zone change and everything, and he really did confuse the Planning Commission and the board. But the board was sharp enough to kind of deny it anyway, partially on the basis of his report. I could tell on the basis of my background, even though I'm not a soil scientist, his report didn't hold together. It was confusing, and I thought, this guy, I don't know if he can be trusted. So I advocated that it was too bad the county couldn't afford to have somebody like we've got in Public Works. When we have an engineer, we have an engineer in Public Works that will review what the engineers write, because we aren't experts. So I could easily see, just like the foresters have, like Norm Fuller has to do, he has to send it up to a committee of professional foresters to okay that his methodology is correct and that it's clear. So why can't we have the same thing, just a simple panel of soil experts that it goes to, that it bypasses DLCD, but it gets sent back with their stamp saying that so-and-so soil scientist has followed procedure, it is done correctly, and it's acceptable thing. That helps them, that avoids all the problems with DLCD and so forth.
Well, there already is in existence a soil scientist, or what are they calling it?
SS,
The Soil Scientist Society of America.
And if somebody disagrees,
own industry by getting that guy out of the industry.
That's exactly.
But they have to be notified.
No, the guy doesn't.
There, the guy does.
I know he exists too.
Is he still practicing?
Yeah,
still
practicing.
Well, one person is no longer.
But anyway, that's one of the that came up. I think either Bob or Keith Kubik was talking about the type, and I think the soil scientist from.
Well, he's from Douglas County.
Douglas County had said that it could. That's a process that's already there.
Yeah, so
people just have to use
it.
Is that?
But we're not aware of it.
Jack and Edward.
The issue goes to evidence in a quasi. The difficulty, the traditional way to handle that testing of the evidence is that the opposing party comes in with their own evidence and the one is laid against the other. By the trier of fact, if you will, in this case, the planning commission. The difficulty expressed by Mike Walker, calling for these rules, is that, quote, quote, because of trespass concerns, he can't go and get his own soil sample. The legal proceeding and the strategy. Well, the parties have access to, they can demand to inspect the property. And the party that's provoked all of this has to give them access. So all it needs is a clarification that he who would challenge the evidence have access to go and develop his own. That's all it takes. And that's traditional in the litigation system. You do not need a bureaucracy. You do not need a stamp of LCDC approved on the evidence that you bring in before it's the commission. And then let the two experts, when they get there, talk about it.
Yeah.
And one will hold water and one won't.
Margaret.
It also seems that in the case of this person that you're talking about, that it was clear to you and to the board of commissioners wasn't credible. And so.
And that it worked in that case.
Yes.
But that he has apparently done other things that don't go to hearing. It just goes to the planner and the planning director's decision, and they don't feel they have the experience or the expertise to evaluate, so they just feel they have to take him at his word.
Well, it seems like that's something that could go to the Society of America, and then he could be, they
could have an action or something. Right, and there should be, it doesn't have to be a DLCD panel, because the foresters, they're in their own association. And then it would be part of the whole application process. I also see a problem with.
There's six of these guys at issue. Who's going to be the panel?
OSU, whoever trained them.
Malcolm, did you have your hand up?
I did.
Okay.
That's very encouraging news, Jack, and the Planning Commission and the Board of Hartman needs to know how that's supposed to work, because in my testimony they said, no, you can't go on the land, nobody go on the land, that's just too bad.
Okay. So that's cool. Well, what is needed is a House Bill 3872 spelling it out that a party in one of these quasi-judicial adversarial confrontations has access to all of the methods of discovery available in a litigation. No, no.
You're saying that is the law in regards to these.
If I were an attorney involved in the problem, I would demand it and make somebody show me why I wasn't entitled to it.
Well, that would solve the problem.
Why couldn't the report be released in advance to the opposing parties so they have opportunity? That's another option. That's another option. Rather than having them go out on the property, if somebody wants to report, they want to go hire somebody to.
It's not just second report, Harold. It's like, if I'm not going to mention any name, but I have seen some things over the years where soil scientists have gone out and claimed to have dug test pits on every hole, and on every parcel, there's no test pits, and things like that. It happens. But that particular person is no longer practicing as a soil scientist, fortunately, but. He writes these reports. He's a soil scientist. They look great. They never happen. He wrote them the way the landowner wanted to write them.
Yeah. But the thing that was brought up at the meeting on Thursday from the soil scientists is there are some situations where they really don't need to dig holes. Because I heard it. Didn't he say that?
I'm just saying if you're biased, you can write a good report that has no relationship with what's actually on the ground. That's why it would be better if somebody could go out on the ground and an actual look.
Yeah. Gordon.
Well, you know, welcome to the real world. You go to the doctor, and he specializes in heart surgery, and he goes, yeah, you need a triple bypass. You know, you probably could get by without a triple bypass, but he's got vested interest in selling it. You call me out, and you say, you know, I don't know if I need a new roof or not. Oh, hell yeah, you need a new roof. Yeah, I would live in this house for another day without a new roof, you know. I don't need it. I mean, I do have the CCB that if I actually totally burn you, you can take me to court and everything else. But, I mean, that's the way it is out there. And it's like all these things. If we think that somehow we can absolutely guarantee with some kind of legislation and some kind of state oversight that we're going to get a totally impartial, objective view of everything, you know, like I said, welcome to the real world. I don't see why soil scientists should be any different than heart doctors or people that sell you medicines on TV. Everybody makes a claim. Everybody has got a vested interest, and everybody's going to do what keeps them in business, you know.
That's totally different. If I'm a homeowner and somebody wants to tell me I need a roof, I can call another roofer and say, would you look at it? With this instance, nobody else can take a look at it, period. Unless they follow Jack's advice, which I like.
Okay, Jack, and then Bob.
I'm going to say, in response, the difference in the real world in Walter is that in litigation, this is the famous battle of the experts, and yes, each one is on this guy's side and that guy's side, and everybody knows it when they come before the court. But the one with the most credibility, the one who is most persuasive, is going to win the day.
50-50 chance.
That's the way the system works.
But it's not going to create any more experts out there just by passage of the legislation. If they aren't there, they're not there.
Bob.
The way the system is, there's very few soil classifiers. And the one that used to do those without the pits, he was not a soil classifier. He was a soil scientist.
In the bill,
rules as they were drafted, and we've come to find out that the Soil Society of America is no longer going to be creating soil classifiers. So if you are one, you are one, and you get to keep it forever. But what they're going to do is to form a committee here at the state that will include somebody from Oregon State, Oregon State, soil science, somebody from the Department of Agriculture, and somebody from NRCS. And soil scientists are going to have to submit their credentials and their additional experience to be equivalent to what a soil classifier does. So there will be some checks and balances there, and the way the rule is written, as reports come in, they will be sent off to this committee, and they will check their reports and see if they're credible, and if they do not meet standards, then they will decertify them from being able to participate. So there is some self-correction here, and from a planner that's been in this thing for over 30 years, I've seen planning evolve to the quasi-judicial thing that it's become, and it's no longer what makes the best sense out of the whole thing. It's who's got the biggest hammer to try and beat somebody with. The land use system has been bogging down more and more with the appeals to LUBA, with the rules from ODOT in the transportation planning rule that has nothing to do with planning anymore. It's just a technical exercise, and who's got the most perseverance to get through with it, and it's becoming no fun anymore to try and make sense out of planning. And so that's why I hate to see this evolve into a more contested case kind of a system. I think there are some checks and balances that can come in the way parts of this rule make a lot of sense. A lot of it doesn't make any sense, but I think with the ethics from the Soil Society of America and with a local board that will review the work on a periodic basis, that makes sense on how to deal with it. Because this whole thing was sold, well, the local planners don't have the expertise to do it. When you read the rule, DLCD that's going to review each and every report, they have no more expertise than the local planners, so it's just state control. The only thing that makes any sense out of this is looking at the soil scientists to make sure that the six that are there now are not going to just go away. We need to be able to have some credible reports.
And the thing that bothered me about this was when it was mentioned by the staff that this is from an arm's length, because that's why LCDC or DLC is involved. But DLCD is a party, an adversarial party to every land use involvement that we have in the state of Oregon. And so all of a sudden an adversarial party is receiving this report and is not reviewable by anybody else. Mm-hmm. And as a party to that, I think that's mm-hmm. offensive to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. LCD is pushing that they want everybody.
You want to go. So anyway, that's where we are on this issue.
Right.
And I'll put together a letter and get it out around. The only other thing I want to bring up before we leave is that at the LCDC meeting, they did adopt their policy and rulemaking agenda for the next year. And on that is it's the farm forest remapping of pilot program HB 2229 that was adopted in 2009. And one of the other discussions was HB 3615, which is the one that almost made it through the legislature that was going to provide us, as Josephine County, Jackson, and Douglas, as a pilot for reviewing the
regionalization.
Well, regionalization with definitions of the farm and forest. That one, according to the commission, is not going to be on the high priority list for DLCD. They said that that's not the bill that they're really interested in. They want them to put their effort into House Bill 2229. And that basically was brought forward by the staff as their recommendation. So it looks like the state is going to be moving forward for HB 2229. And at this point, there's only two counties that have indicated an interest. Deschutes has actually sent a letter in saying they want to participate. And Jackson also has. And they needed at least two counties before they would start moving forward on this. And Josephine at one time had indicated they might be interested, but I'm not sure there was anything officially done. If they're not included, then they'll be left out of this process. But we just want to start keeping an eye on this, because it's going to be moving through their process, it looks like, in December of this year. No, January it's going to start their process, and it's considered a medium priority. The other thing that's on their agenda that's interesting is private parks. And it's a low priority, but I have a feeling that this has something to do with the park issue that we have over on Lower River Road. That the commission may be looking at, or has been, somehow this thing is being moved through their process.
Shouldn't that be a public park, though?
Well, it's a public park on private land, but
yeah.
My point is that there's a process that somebody has asked them to start looking at how to be able to utilize park lands. And paranoia is just good thinking when people are after you, is my belief. But I know they were on a tour in Josephine County, and I believe that was one of the areas that they did get a chance to take a look at. So. Anyway, those are the only things I have.
Wait, there's one other thing. Bring up the high cosmopolitan then.
Metropolitan.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. The other one is back in 2009, there was a bill passed that House Bill 2001, and it was brought forward through by the American Planning Association, I believe. And I sat in on a meeting 2 years ago over in Medford that had basically staffs from the cities and the county. And I was sort of the only uninvited guest there. But the whole purpose of this was for the start looking at a regional metropolitan planning structure. In other words, the counties would no longer be in the planning decision-making business. It would be done by a regional group that would be created. And that was that's sort of the emphasis that's being put on. So the counties would be out of the commissioners would be out of the planning business, basically, and it would go to a metro, similar to what's up in the Portland, the metro Portland metro area, and that's going to be coming.
It's not exactly like city-county government combined.
No, it's a strictly planned. And I don't know any of the detail. It was a discussion. Most of the staff backed away because they weren't sure where their elected officials were on this one. They say the only other there were two elected officials at that meeting, myself, Sandy Casanelli, a city council member from Jacksonville, Jim Lewis was his name, and the rest of them were all staff people. And
this is urban versus rural.
In essence. Yeah. So anyway, that's coming down the track, and it'll probably be something we'll be looking at. Maybe we won't, but somebody
in the area makes sense.
County should be looking at it.
So it could be Cosmopolitan.
So next question, we apparently made a motion to invite the Hicks, Richardson, and Atkinson to our November 14th meeting. So we will have a November 14th meeting. I think that will be the only item on the agenda, unless there's some other issue that pops up.
Gordon?
Yeah, his was on.
Well, yeah,
we'll keep that.
If we get acceptance from those people, we should probably concentrate on that.
My other
idea of this is just going to be kind of a general round table discussion, just to talk about some of the issues.
Well, I think some of the planning rules and issues that we see at the local level here that could be, but we see it conflicting and may need some state help on changing some of the, i.e., rulemaking or laws or whatever. So think about that as far as what are some of the questions or thoughts you'd like to pass on to these folks, because it's a real opportunity. So I would certainly encourage you. I know that the commission on Thursday, the LCDC commission, they wanted to hear from our local people, and they had a roundtable from 4 to 5. Malcolm was there. I don't know, were you an invited person? Were you one of the invited people? Anyway, it was invited folks, primarily planning directors, elected officials. I think planning commission chair people must have been invited. The only elected officials that showed up there were Mayor Murphy from Grants Pass, Mayor Hank Williams from Central Point, Sandy Casanelli, and John Rasher as a commissioner from Jackson County. The rest of the folks were the planning directors from here, Jackson County and Douglas County, planning commission chair from Jackson County, planning director from City of Grants Pass, SoReady representative, and economic development, Steve Dahl. But I guess my concern was that it was really a missed opportunity to really get some input back to this commission that really wanted to hear. I mean, I think they were honestly wanting to hear what any issues that we felt at the local level needed to be fixed, and that they were there to take it on. And this Steve, I think his name is Steve Van Landingham, who's a chair, is a very sincere person. I've had some good conversations with him, and I think he was really wanting to hear some. And he heard zip. Absolutely zip. It was the most disappointing in my mind. I don't know about you.
Well,
but
I was only present physically. I was really out of
it. Oh, yeah. But it was really a missed opportunity. But unfortunately, Sandy talked about the monument, which this committee had no interest in whatsoever. City Grants Pass wasn't really sure. They weren't briefed, I don't think, well enough to really put anything on the table. Sandy wasn't briefed on anything, and like I say, she talked about the monument issue again.
And David was there.
David was there.
Oh, he was?
He was there.
And he didn't,
I don't think, offered any real, my perception, that they could have been of value. But my whole feeling is that why I say that is we have an opportunity with our legislative people where we think that there may be some issues that ought to be addressed, that they may be able to help us at the legislative level in the February 20th. Pardon? It wasn't. And like I said, the 4 to 5 was invited
really
only.
If they really wanted to hear our opinions,
I don't know whether our planning commission chair had been invited or not. There was Gerard. Gerard was there from the urban area.
Urban Area Planning Commission.
They had three members there from the Urban Area Planning Commission. That's happened in the circle.
They wanted to talk about the UGB, and they didn't even, not like the UGB committee, they didn't even notify us.
Oh, really?
I heard it from somebody on the Urban Planning Commission that was happening there. I wasn't wrong darn thing about it.
Well, it sounded like Gerard had been invited.
Yeah, he was on the Urban Area Planning
Commission.
All of them were invited.
But as part, but he was part of that urban growth boundary issue as well. But but anyway, my point being is that if we have an opportunity for folks to show up, to give them an earful of what we think need to be changed, if there's anything that needs to be changed. So that's all I have. But we will have a meeting on November 14th. My question is going to be then, are we going to continue after November 14th or not? And I'm sorry, public. Trenor.
Several thoughts on the topic of site index. Early in the discussion, there was mentioned some samples that I believe it was the Department of Revenue or some semblance took. And my suspicion is, because I almost took one of those shots once, was that that would have been a context where you would have gone out on some big parcels and bored a few trees so that the Department of Revenue would have some idea of the quality of land in their business of assigning value. And to the extent where they were small samples, yes, it's a small sample, but it was for a specific purpose, and you wouldn't necessarily use it for anything else. But it would give you an indication, particularly if the land was uniform. Second thing was something you mentioned about dominance and codominance. That's part of a classification of an even age stand, of which there are four categories: dominant, codominant, intermediate, and suppressed. You don't want to measure the intermediate and the suppressed because they're shorter.
Right.
So if you get into your dominance and codominance and get a height over age, that'll give you a site index almost at any point in their age, not when they're really young perhaps, but once they're high as the ceiling here and on up, you can generally get a fairly good indication. And obviously it's better the more, you know, strength you have to wind the borer and how accurate your height measurements are, and then you put it at the table, and there you are. And why they seem to be ignoring what one might consider best evidence is anybody's guess.
Okay. Thank you. Anyway, I would encourage us to decide whether we shall continue onward after the November 14th meeting as a committee, or sort of go into a holding pattern until we see how the recommendations move through the process.
How much money is left for the Christmas party?
We barely make it. So with that, we are adjourned. And I'm sorry I didn't keep us till 8.
Ah, shoot.
Almost.
I apologize. I really do feel bad about that.
1 second. 1 second.
I'll make up for it the next.